Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, you're in luck. We like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes for the first day of December. Good God, where has the time gone? 2022. I am Jeff Hawkins alongside one Chris Novembrino. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Jeffrey. How are you?
I'm doing well. We had an odd request, and I told you this before I hit record, but a couple of people are like, hey, you two are music geeks. You're going to talk a little Christine McVie on the show. I was like, okay, I can do that for a little bit of banter before we head into the graps. Christine McVie might be a Fleetwood Mac passed this weekend. The best, I was thinking about this, and I think of her almost as the George Harrison of Fleetwood Mac. She's a little overlooked compared to Lindsey Buckingham, Stevie Nicks, and she doesn't have the personality like Mick did / Ringo. But her songs were always solid, but it always felt like to me, it's like, oh, Christine wants to put a song on the album or a couple of songs on the album. And I'm going to be honest with you, probably their best, possibly my favorite Fleetwood Mac song is a Christine McVie song, which is You Make Loving Fun.
You Make Loving Fun's a very good song.
It's a very good song. I go between that and Gold Dust Woman for my favorite Fleetwood Mac track. But it's one of those things where it's like between Lindsey and Stevie's snarkiness, here's just somebody who wants, I just want to make pretty love songs and I just want to be in love. And I always find that a nice soothing salve between the barbs going on amongst the band. But if, then you think about it, like You Make Love and Fun is about the affair she's having with the lighting guy while she's still married to the bass player. Possibly my favorite member of Fleetwood Mac, John McVie, who just says nothing and does nothing. It's just there to be a bass player and do cocaine, which is what Mick always did. But it's one of those weird things where I gravitate towards her songs sometimes even more than the Lindsey Stevie collaborations. And she's had a hand in a lot of their bigger hits in terms of radio mainstream play, like Hold Me, which was their quote unquote comeback album in the mid 80s. I mean, Everywhere is now getting, you know, a ton of play because of its usage on a car commercial campaign. I'm like, nobody knew this song before when it came out the first time, but here it is. You know, Songbird is of course a pretty song. Her contribution to Don't Stop is pretty damn good too. So yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I think what's notable about Fleetwood Mac is that every member charted a top 20 song as like main composer at some point.
Did John McVie then do one?
Yeah. John McVie wrote one too. I think didn't he write? I mean, he has some writing credit on the chain, right?
Oh, I Man.
Man, this might be a music factoid that I'm botching, but like,
well,
I definitely
gonna look it up right now just to see. Just
yeah, see. Yeah. This, but like, I wanna say every single member like actually charted a top 20 song is like one of the kind of claims to fame.
Oh, all
band.
Five have writing credits on the chain.
Okay, all five.
Maybe Lindsay, Christine, John, and Mick. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that would make sense. That boom, ba da 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 is like a important part of the song.
Yeah. I do like John McVie's bass quite a lot, especially in that in Gold Dust Woman, where he's just kind of like riffing a little bit on there. But yeah. But yeah, Christine McVie always a welcome change to some of the snarkier songs of Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks.
Yeah,
that's the thing. I was listening to some today, and you're just like, these two just want to cut each other's throats out. Christine just wants to sing love songs.
I think every band needs a change of pace vocal, and it's really important for that change of pace vocal to bring something that is meaningfully different. See the phrase change of pace, but I she's a really pleasant one. Like, she
it's weird because there are some,
but it's nice to have three or four songs with her on it.
Yeah, it's weird because there are some bands where that doesn't work. Like, one of my favorite bands is Traffic, and the Dave Mason songs, it's clear Dave wants to be in a totally different band than Steve Winwood and Jim Capaldi, and that's why they kept throwing him out of the band. It's like, you just want to do pop, and we want to do our weird experimental crap over here. Yeah, but yeah, it's nice to have a fully formed band. Yeah, I don't. I'm a Fleetwood Mac fan, but I'm not a fanatic. Like, I couldn't tell you a lot of like the writing credits on each and every song, or you know, the personnel. But you know, but again, that's my favorite Fleetwood Mac song is Hers, and Hers are usually ranked very highly up there. And You Make Love and Fun is just, it's just such a great little song. I love it.
I like that we never actually hit the chorus slash refrain of You Make Loving Fun until the very end of the song. It makes like the structure of the song is so fun because it's like hitting what effectively is the chorus. If you're like looking at it as a structure, really is written and feels like a pre-chorus. The I never did believe in miracles or like in the ways of magic, but I'm beginning to wonder why. Like,
I like the way that syllable. Like that syllable drops, like the I'm willing to believe or whatever. It sounds like she's almost swallowed the word there when she's
the believe in the ways of magic.
Like, you almost don't catch the I'm willing to believe. It's like you just catch the believe part as opposed to the I'm willing, because it's at such a low tone that it blends in with the synth and the bass at that same time. But
the guitar line there is really cool too. It has like Buckingham when he's doing that like shimmering kind of birds like quality thing that his finger picking style does. It's nice. And that's a great song where it really all kind of works together. Buckingham has a nice solo at it, or in it, and Mick Fleetwood always finds an interesting way to punch up every single song with like at least one interesting like drum idea or drum fill
or something. Yeah.
Yes, every single song has at least something to make it just a little bit more interesting. And like, I feel like maybe at one point people were like, oh, you know, he's always trying to put a stamp on it. But like now, especially in an era where like so many drummers and so much drums are just auto-triggered in, and they're sort of auto-triggered in like a mindless sort of way, it's really nice to feel like a sense of composition in the percussion.
Yeah, and it's weird because like one of my first exposures to Mick Fleetwood was as an actor. He's in The Running Man, the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, he always wants to tell you he's there, much like Ringo. There's always one thing. Oh, yeah, Mick Fleetwood's here. He's solid. He can do it. But yes, there's your musical interlude for those who requested it. And now for the rest of you yelling at us to just get to the wrestling talk, here goes nothing.
Yeah, this is making yell at us about the wrestling talk.
Oh, get ready. We're going in on AEW, probably. But a report today, WWE planning a major show for January in India. The event would come 2 years after WWE Superstar Spectacle was filmed for the Indian market back in January 22, 2021. It's a weird statement to say, but that
explains why they've been heating up my boy Jinder Mahal again.
Have they?
he's and I just been didn't on notice TV it? A couple of times. Yeah, okay. No, he's been on TV.
Yeah.
As compared to in months prior where he has not been on TV at all.
Well, if for those of you who don't remember it, why would you? That event featured Drew McIntyre teaming with Indus Shear and defeating Jinder Mahal and the Bollywood Boys in the main event. It was filmed with no fans in attendance from Tropicana Field and aired on India's Republic Day 4 days later on January 26th. I assume this one will be live in India, which is going to be very interesting given that there might be a spike in COVID during the winter. But yeah, it looks like they're going to go back to that market because they view it as a growth market. And let's put it this way. If Satnam Singh is not under contract with AEW, he will soon be under contract with WWE.
Yeah, right. No, they'll make a play for him. That guy's got something. He's definitely got something.
Oh, yeah, no, I enjoy his work. I assume, like, Great Khali will be on this for a special appearance, too. I don't know. How do you feel about, you know, Mark? I mean, this kind of, let's call it what it is, racial pandering for specific markets.
It's pretty icky, right? It's icky specifically because do not actually on a week to week basis take good care of a guy like Mansoor, a guy who you and I legitimately think is talented.
Yeah,
I'm not saying he's like a world champion or whatever, but like Mansoor should be a meaningful part of the mid card, and if he was a meaningful part of the mid card, and then this company chose to showcase him more when they got into a Saudi Arabia show, I would have no problem with that because Mansoor is like on TV every week. He's like a regular character on TV. Yeah, we're going on to this guy's home turf in the same way that like when The Miz goes to Cleveland, you know, yes. The Miz, but you know what I'm saying. Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. Yeah, like, yeah, you get
this
the
is
idea.
This is cynical. This is oh, we're going to this guy's country and we don't have a real star, so let's just give him a quick push into a main event thing, and he'll be with real main eventers, and then we'll pop the market, and then we can grow it. It's like, that's not how this works.
It'd be one thing if they had made Veer at this point. Like, if they had actually built this guy up, and he was, like, a credible dude, and regular on TV, maybe, like, had, like, a meaningful match against Roman Reigns. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you built up Veer, okay. Cool. Then when you go to India, showcase Veer, you make this about Veer Mahan. And that makes a lot of sense considering, you know, $1 million arm and everything else too, right? Like, this would be the guy to push. And there's a way to do this where it's business savvy without being racially pandering. And I'm with you on this. I think WWE falls well south of the mark here. I do believe it's certainly possible to showcase people well in their hometowns. That's also a thing historically WWE's not been very good at either. But I think in particular, you've got to be really mindful about it when you're like going to these different countries. There's a smarter way of doing this. It's time to move out of the Vince era.
Yeah, there's a difference between having, he's Indian and he works for WWE versus we have a star who happens to be Indian. And now we're going to give him a nice little win in his hometown or in his home country. And you guys can be proud of him. I mean, it kills me that they think fandom is this stupid. That's the only thing that appears to me. But it's like, oh, you know what? We'll put the Bollywood Boys in the main event. And look, I love the Bollywood Boys. Don't get me wrong. I do. They're great. But it's one of those things where they mistreated those guys as just, you know, red shirts for various acts. And they expected everybody to come flooding in because, hey, these are Canadians of your ancestry. Come watch them and give us money, kind of a thing. And you're just like, well, why? Because we watch the American product and we know that you treat them like geeks. Why would we come watch them just because, you know, we have the same skin color? That's just so, it's so cynical. It defies explanation for me.
Yeah, and I'll give you an example where it's not pandering. When Kevin Owens goes to Montreal, it's not pandering because Owens is regularly featured on TV every week.
Yes, and he's made to look good, yeah.
Yeah, made to look good. Like it's actually not really hard to do this. Just make sure these guys you want to use as the anchors in these certain places are given the same level of consideration as Kevin Owens. I'm not saying the same spot in the card as Kevin Owens. I'm saying the same level of consideration, that they're always doing something meaningful in the card.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to grow a territory, make it look like it's you know, make it look like you actually care about the territory as opposed to just, hey, they're from your hometown. Come shell out bucks to see them live, you marks. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and like, I guess one last point on the pandering thing. I think the herky-jerk nature of the booking around Sangha also belies a certain, like, pandering thing. They were getting one character going with this guy, and then they decided, no, we're going to India.
We need evil foreign heel number 8,000 with him as opposed to confident, you know, suave ladies man of Indian descent, which he was, and he was great at it. I didn't understand this at all, to be honest.
No, I know that Sangha character was a very interesting character. A guy with like actual like depth and layers and just like interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he had this weird charisma that just came off the screen and you're just like, okay, they have something here. Maybe he doesn't have the skill level in the ring just yet, but there's something you can work with here in these sketches. And look, as much as I don't necessarily like comedy sketches and things like that in wrestling, the fact is WWE's entire marketing machine is based on personality and getting that over versus work rate or anything, getting the characters over. And he had a character and he was nailing it week after week. And then they just decide to change the character because, well, we need to do something with Veer too, who we've also horribly miscast, to be honest with you.
Right. Yeah. And we've done like several different pushes that have all been very absent-minded.
Yeah. So this is what you Veer get when you get, middle-aged white men who have existed in stereotype land for 30 years and that's all they know. I mean,
right. And led by like, you know, the aging boomer male adulterer.
Yeah,
for the better part of this.
Yes. Well, I was thinking Road Dogg. Who are you thinking of?
Oh, I was thinking Vince.
Oh, you're thinking of Vince.
I mean, like,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you think, I mean, a lot of the stuff we're talking about,
is Vince light or Vince centric?
Yeah. Right. And we're still like coming off of the Vince era. I mean, if anything, I give them credit for how much things have actually meaningfully changed in such a short period of time. There's still much work to be done, but like. I mean, a lot of this mishandling of these Indian characters, and also, I mean, when we think of the pandering with Mansoor in particular, that's all Vince, right? Like, those have been some of the best.
But I mean, that's also been pro wrestling thinking for ages, you know, the evil foreign heel, blah, blah, blah. And like, they don't know what to do when that guy gets, I mean, like, you remember Muda in the NWA was getting over and getting to be a baby face, and he had people in his ear. You can allege who, but Gary Hart seems to be a pretty prime candidate, even though he denied it. Was like, well, if you they make you a baby face, then you lose all your mystique, and you know they won't treat you well, and they won't give me a paycheck, and things like that. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, even like Umaga was starting to get over, you know, for his toughness and his style and things like that, and they just didn't know how to pull the trigger on a baby face like that. They kind of did with Rikishi, except, you know, all he was dancing fat guy who rubbed butt in face, and you know, that's not really star, that's attraction.
By the time they did it with Rikishi, he was so limited mobility wise that, like, yeah, really all he could do is the butt in the face stuff.
Yeah.
Rikishi is an entertaining,
and don't get me wrong,
ass,
people love the butt in the face. People
No, I know, but like when you actually like watch those matches, you know, with kind of like the work rate eye on, right? Like, you start to see that like Rikishi didn't actually do a whole hell of a lot during those matches.
AEW,
he did get over. AEW.
Last night's show, we are recording this on Thursday night, so SmackDown and Rampage have not happened, although I've read the Rampage spoilers, and brother, you ain't missing much, which is a problem in its own right. But AEW did 870,000.26, the lowest ever in 18 to 49 on an unopposed Wednesday, and it's lowest since the infamous January 6 riots. I don't know why they decided to compare it to that, but at the same time, it is a memorable news event. But 870,000.26 unopposed. Can we now have an adult conversation as to whether or not Tony knows how to cook? Can we, kids? Yeah. Because I get buried for this all the time. And it's not that the pay-per-views aren't good.
Kind of a turd on Wednesday.
Yeah. It's not that the pay-per-views aren't good. It's not that pay-per-views don't have good work rate. And it's not that even the week-to-week TV shows don't have good matches at times. But man, there was
Jackson,
a lot of that.
Danielson was a banger.
Danielson and Dax. Thank you. I almost called him the WWE name. Great friggin' match. Indescribable promos on this show as well, and we'll get to that in the Lazy River, I assume. But look, I'm not gonna sound the clarion call of AEW's in trouble. They're not. They have a great working relationship with their business partner. But if I'm Discovery, I'm looking at these numbers and I'm going, okay, can I get something cheaper here that'll push ratings? And
I'm asking what's going on.
Yeah, well, you remember also Discovery's whole thing is cutting costs. That's their entire business model right now. And all they need is an excuse. And if you come in there asking for a big raise, if it continues like this, but at the same time, here's a question. This was going to go into some of my Lazy River stuff, but at the same time, I go, who are AEW's biggest stars right now, Chris? In terms of if you watched this television, who are the big people you would build around?
I mean, clearly our big star is MJF.
I would agree there, yeah.
We let the guy redesign the belt in his image, and we can talk about that play here in a bit. But like, clearly he's the big star.
My 2 and 3 might surprise you.
Ooh, I was gonna say maybe Orange Cassidy. Like even though he's kind of like low, like it seems like he's kind of low, but he still gets presented pretty strongly.
He's popular, but I don't know if he's the star of the show. Like I would say, Britt Baker and Jade Cargill.
Okay. I don't know about Jade.
Well, she comes out and she cuts promos, which is
no. I'm with you. I was going to say Baker 2, Moxley 3.
Okay, I can go with Moxley. Although Moxley,
he's a bigger star than Cargill.
Well, after last night, they need to really figure out, do we want him to be a babyface? Do we want him to be a heel? Because I don't think the Stone Cold thing that he's doing. I mean, they're gonna move him back and forth between heel and babyface depending on who he's facing. And I get the Shades of Grey thing, but man, I think between Adam Page and Moxley in terms of a feud, I think people are gonna be confused as to who to root for.
Yeah, I agree. It's just like two guys who are angry at each other fighting. And I wonder if people are really going to be able to pick a person to cheer for.
I think they're going to pick the heel because that's who they're gravitating towards with every other feud.
Right. No, it's weird. No, so what will end up happening is Moxley will default to the heel. Eventually, the crowd will gravitate towards Moxley because they'll prefer the heel because like this crowd, ironically, like.
Yes, there's an issue with AEW and babyfaces along with WWE and babyfaces. It's like playing the heel is far more interesting because you get to say things that you can't, and everybody knows that the good guy is going to do what the good guy does. And so all these crowds now are just really wanting everybody to turn because that's the most interesting thing about them. And these crowds, it's weird because they don't respond to heels. I mean, we're getting into Lazy River territory, so let's just go into it. Lazy River of wrestling criticism. Whatever we watch, whatever's on our mind, we'll talk about here.
Hey, you want to talk about AEW Dynamite?
Let's talk about AEW Dynamite a little bit, because in the wrestling critique business, there's been a few top names have really been crowd shaming of late, and there was a lot of crowd shaming over MJF's promo last night. Because they weren't responding to anything and they weren't booing him as a heel necessarily. They were kind of cheering him on. Like they cheered him on when he turned on Regal, which let me put it this way. Sean Ross Sapp today reported that Regal's contract is up in December versus a 3-year deal. If you were going to write off William Regal, that would be the way I would do it, to be honest with you. And it's very weird because now it's like, if you didn't, now the whole angle is about Regal's redemption with the Blackpool Combat Club as opposed to getting MJF over stronger. But nevertheless, let's talk about crowd shaming here. I know that MJF was trying to heel on this crowd, but the ways he was doing it was so... Number one, he was playing the hits. He was playing his hits, which is always, you know, the contract negotiation. You guys are poor. You know, he did a sports team video that I guess was played in the arena from what I heard, et cetera, as opposed to, you know, really laying into him. But
and
also
then, and tearing down the fourth wall a little bit. That's an MJF thing too.
Yeah. And that's what,
and that's a crutch move that he does. That's a crutch move that he does.
Yeah. I don't like the fourth wall breaking. I think it's one of those things where it's like, well, if you're talking about being miserable in the place you're working, then everybody's going to be kind of rooting for you to leave and go somewhere where you'll be happy and paid, as opposed to here. And I just think I think it's working against him, to be honest with you. It was a baffling promo in so many ways. But does AEW have a conditioning problem now? Because we've seen them now turn all these heels kind of likable baby faces at times, be it DMD, be it Jade Cargill, be it MJF, even being Moxley at times. I mean, do we have somebody that people hate that isn't hated because people don't think they're a pure enough wrestler, so to speak? I mean, do we have a character that we were, I mean, Ethan Page, maybe because like Hobbs seems to be getting treated like a babyface too. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Now Hobbs is getting a babyface treatment. It feels like that vignette this week felt very much like a repackaging in a favorable light of Hobbs.
Yeah, feel sorry for him because he had a tough upbringing. You're just like, is this our heel?
Tough upbringing. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, right. Circling back on the MJF thing, this promo really, really felt flat. No one was upset that he was going to be champion forever. No one was upset that he was going to only wrestle on the pay-per-view. And I don't blame the crowd for that. You made people kind of like love him, and like in a weird way, the way he was going to like threaten or hurt you is you're not going to get to see me wrestle and you love watching me wrestle, which is actually the opposite of this, the way this is supposed to work, which is you're supposed to hate me as champion because my matches are old reliable and the bad guy always wins. And crowd's not really behind Starks. And the Burberry belt thing. Let's talk about the Burberry belt.
The BBB?
Yeah, the BBB.
Big Burberry belt?
The big Burberry belt. I mean, this title reign better kick ass because he has now really committed himself to, you know, like, once he's gotten the belt, it's like, oh, well, I guess we're doing this for a while now. And I'm not confident that this is going to go super awesome.
This
right
was
now.
A serpentor of bad ideas. It really was. Cause it combined the John Cena changing the belt to the spinner type of a thing with the Shane Douglas throwing down the actual title belt thing with the cheap heat, with the fourth wall breaking with the, hey, I'm just going to leave and I'm going to name drop Tony or I'm going to Nick Khan and Triple H. And you're like, does anybody know how to build an actual villain in their own universe without mentioning the other guy? Because this is actually making Cody Rhodes look smart. And it makes me realize how much I missed some of Cody Rhodes' stuff. And those people all pissed on him when he was killing himself. You know, this is I believe this is the 1 year anniversary of the flaming table spot he did with Andrade. And you're just like, you just remember how people were like, boo, he's just a try hard kind of a thing. And you're like, yeah, but he understood basic babyface heel dynamics at times. It's just you all didn't want to accept him as a babyface. I'm
leaving this promo, what is MJF's big plan?
Yes.
Like,
who is
how is he
focused
dominate?
Against?
Yes. Yeah. Like, what is his goal? Like, he wants to hold on to the title forever. Okay, I get that. But like, when he poo-pooed away the firm, like, I guess maybe at some point he'll get revenge on the firm, but it's not going to be particularly narratively satisifying.
Well, he even changed his tone on that. He goes, I kind of respect them. And you're just like, well, okay.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah. I kind of respect them. But he was also sort of saying, like, I would never, like, you know, go out of my way. I mean, even if he got, you know, comeuppance on them, who cares? And, you know, that also made Ethan Page frothing about wanting to beat MJF seem, you know, more unimportant later on. And then once he takes out Regal, okay, yeah, you got to write off Regal. I mean,
maybe
blue sky scenario.
If he's staying, you don't. That's the weird
thing. No, right. I mean, there's that too. I mean, it makes the Blackpool Combat Club narrative completely incoherent at this point. Like, it's that. I mean, when the Jericho Appreciation Society was like, you guys are a mess. I was like, so they're like, but they are. Like, they really are. Like, this is like a horribly written faction right now.
Like, you would think if this were an actual story that'd be one of those things where MJF has now lured Regal under his spell, and he's going to take the moment when it's right to destroy him, as opposed to, well, just the next week. We haven't even heard Regal's motivation for any of this. And it was very weird because I was watching his body language as MJF was cutting this promo, and after
he starts getting disgusting when he starts talking about Danielson.
Well, yeah, it was one of those things where he was clearly he was looking uncomfortable after the whole and being let down type of Pat thing. And it's like, okay, we're already doing buyer's remorse with William Regal. Okay.
It's like Regal shouldn't have had. I mean, if you wanted to do this week two, which I think is an idiotic time to do this, Regal absolutely should have had no buyer's remorse during any of this.
Yes,
like when
he
MJF
have been
is
proud.
Slagging Danielson, when MJF is slagging Danielson, like he should be looking at MJF and nodding, and like we should really see that Regal has like fully made the deal with the devil and has embraced the devil, and then that makes when like. He gets the brass knuckles that much better. But like Regal, the whole thing was the blocking of this was very stupid because MJF walks up with the brass knuckles in front of Regal and is like standing in front of Regal with the brass knuckles on and then stands behind Regal and like, I was going to say Emperor Gestalt him, but that probably only is a reference that lands for like some Final Fantasy VI people. But basically just like pounds him in the back of the head. It was a very poorly blocked sequence in which it made Regal look like an absolute idiot. And you had also shown him having second thoughts like prior to this. So when you're having second thoughts about the person you're in bed with already, like the idea that they're going to just come behind you and you're not gonna be like, what are they doing right now is really far-fetched. In order for this to work, he needed to be completely all in. And that would have made Danielson still coming out to help him and being really distraught regardless much more poignant than this version of what ended up happening.
It also should have been your main event angle, to be honest with you, because this is the world title. I understand that you're pushing this.
At this point, right? Yeah, at this point, Danielson, like, he should have grabbed the mic and cut like a huge fiery promo at this point, saying, like, he wants MJF's head. He's not going to stop until he has MJF's head, and he's going to break him. And it's not even about the title. He's just going to break him. He's going to, like, you know, cripple this man. He's going to put him out.
There were four things at once going on in this entire segment that should have been kind of spread out over weeks and stuff. You had the Regal doubting, you had the change of the belt. You kind of had the origin story somewhat, and then you had the attack, and it was like, man, we're pushing like 4 weeks worth of angles in one show, and we're also just putting it halfway through the show. Now, what they did well was they actually gave it emotional resonance on commentary for once, which was a nice change. But at the same time, it's like, well, we have a whole hour of show to go here. It's one of the
comment on that. Yeah, moving on now.
Yeah, moving on. Here's our trios title with with the Elite.
It simply cannot be that way when you are just launching a new world champion.
No.
The new world champion has to be the primary focus.
Yes.
Of this is the first episode after Thanksgiving, so this is effectively the first episode back. MJF needed to be the big focus on this. This needed to be the MJF show. It didn't need to have all of these different beats in the story, as you mentioned here, but it did need to have a lot of MJF. MJF's reign of terror has begun. MJF's never going to fight you. He should have been up in Ricky Starks' face. He should have been up in Ethan Page's face. He should have been up in Danielson's face.
He should have been wagging his Johnson all around as the big man on campus.
Yeah, he should have tried to come out in special guest referee a match, you know, like just basically been an obnoxious pain in the ass the entire show to make us want him to go the hell away because we hate him, because we don't like him, because he's bad. And he's like, Lord, like It's like the opposite of how can I miss you if you won't go away? How can I hate you if you're never around to be hated?
Right. Yeah, as opposed to, oh, look, we're getting an MJF promo and everybody's going to cheer because, hey, we finally get to hear from a guy who can promo on this show.
He's a very gifted guy in the microphone. And yeah, I get all that. And I do think he's gifted in the microphone in many ways. But like that's he's not doing it the right way.
Yeah, I'm also concerned. I don't understand why is Bryan Danielson not willing to be a star in this company? Like all
I don't know, and they so sorely need him to be a star right
yes,
now.
Look, he just wants to be a good wrestler, and it's like no. Right.
I'm happy to be the upper mid card gatekeeper who has a really good match with people. Like really, like because no, they need him and to a lesser extent Claudio to be like bigger stars in this company than they are. They're really solid workers, and especially like in this MJF era, here's where you like should have legendary wrestlers coming out and having really good work rate matches with this guy and coming up short through dastardly means.
Yeah.
Like it's the perfect formula for this MJF title reign.
But Dax,
it's a much better formula, frankly, than it's much better formula than Ricky Starks, for example.
I agree. Yeah. And Ricky Starks, I like Ricky Starks. And when he was a heel cutting promos, he was great. As a babyface, he looks tiny, and all his gesticulations and stuff like that look small time. Like when he's on the ramp there and he's putting the head on his, where he's like, and he comes into on the turnbuckle and he's, you know, pumping his fist to the music. He looks small.
The side pose in particular makes him look like 2.5 dimensional.
Yes.
I don't think it's actually a flattering pose for him to be striking.
Needs to change up that look as a babyface, and they've taken away his one weapon, which was cutting promos on people, because, you know, he's going to be the snarky babyface.
And by the way, like, he needs to be out there. Like, he should have been up in MJF's grill tonight. Like, yes. It actually should have been Starks and Daniels. Like, everyone should have been out there. Like, basically, Danielson should have been tending to Regal, and like Stark should have been out there, you know, like going after MJF, just like, you know,
by
everyone
proxy,
needed to be,
you know, baby faces have friends, so I'm gonna come kick your ass or whatever. Like the one moment I really liked in terms of staging and stuff like that, as soon as they got rid of Matt Hardy and that goofy crap, what was kind of the angry Ethan Page next to Stokely. That looked like a nice little upper mid card, almost main event type of act, you know, where they're seething and they're angry and there's a little bit of menace to them. I actually liked that a lot. I just think we're going to sacrifice Ethan Page now to Ricky Starks, which, you know, then what was the point of this entire tournament, to be honest with you, other than that?
Oh, I know.
I've dominated this conversation. Your turn.
No, you're fine. Let's move on to Jade Cargill's TBS Championship celebration. I thought this was also a giant dud, dude. Like everything from like the baddie scolding and the most ridiculous thing is she's like dressing down the two baddies and they both look like they're about to turn on her and then they don't, and like. Mm-hmm. They should have just turned on her at this point or walked off on her. Is Cargill a heel or a face? Like, what week is it? That's the answer. You have to like look back. And this week she was like uber heel Jade Cargill.
Uber heel, but also at the same time in that way where it's like I passed the airport test, as they like to say, or I'm the big star here. And if you took a picture of me next to any of these geeks in the locker room, people would say I'm the star. And it's not that she's wrong. So she should probably say that at the same time. It's like,
no, I mean, but like my comparison to her about a year ago to the Ultimate Warrior really feels apt.
Oh,
it's,
it is.
It's like a different. Yeah, but it's like she looks like $1 million. She has a promo that, okay, like, no, she's not talking about load the spaceship with the rocket fuel. I wish she would, but she's not. But it's a very sort of one-dimensional sort of promo in a similar way. Like, she has that I'm that bitch line. And what's a Jade Cargill promo without that? It's not much. it really isn't.
She has no foe, and that's a problem.
She has no foe. No one can seem to get a good match out of Jade Cargill. As they might.
Yeah, she is a presence. She is an overwhelming presence on the microphone. But, you know, I mean, I like this version of the baddies a little bit better, but are we setting up a Kira Hogan feud and we're supposed to care about it? Because, you know, just saying that she was in breach of contract and then getting mad at the baddies for hanging out with her, I guess, at WrestleCade, which nobody knew except people who follow them obsessively on social media. And look, there's been a lot of, like, Dave Meltzer made a comment about wanting the Hangman Moxley feud explained on TV as a recap type of thing. And a lot of people, well, if you pay attention to the product, you know that blah, blah, blah. This is still a TV show. And there are people come in and out. And I don't mind a little bit of a recap here and there. I don't view it as stupid.
These are the same people who criticized WWE for years for having no sense of history beyond 2 weeks.
Yes.
And never doing recap packages. So, no, like, I'm sorry. We've got to grade by the same metrics here. And, like, this show does a very bad job when it comes to recapping stuff like this. But I'll be honest, a recap of the Moxley Page feud, I think, would be a mild cleanup of this. It's not that intriguing of a feud.
It's hard the other way. It's assuming everybody knows everything as opposed to over-explaining it. But, like, Raw was in Norfolk this week, and a friend of mine reached out to my brother and says, hey, I know your brother's still into wrestling. I haven't watched it in 10 years. I'm going to a show with my kids. Can you give me an overview of some of the programs or whatnot? And I basically said, look, everything will probably be recapped for you because it's the fallout from a major premium live event. But, you know, here's the roster and here's who you need to know. And I almost nailed everybody that was going to be a top person on this show. And so it's very easy to explain. And then, you know, if he decides to be a fan, great. If he doesn't, I don't mind that at all either. Cause, you know, he probably thinks wrestling is stupid and he outgrew it in the eighth grade, like most normal people. But you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you want people to be able to access your product, even if it's their first time just watching the show. So it's like, okay, why are these two fighting? Well, everybody remembers what happened. Okay. Well, you know, maybe just I understand super fans' thing where it's like, we want this to be ours. So it's like, screw you, noob. We don't need this spoon fed to us. I get that thinking. Don't get me wrong. I do. But at the same time, you know, it's a television show. And every TV show has previously on before it in terms of scripted entertainment, except for wrestling, it seems. You know,
yeah, I guess the real question is, how successful do you want your favorite TV show to be?
Yes, pretty much.
And if you want your show to do better ratings, having recaps that allow for the uninitiated to hop on board makes it much more likely that they're going to keep watching the show because they now understand what's going on. Imagine some dude trying to show this show to their girlfriend for the first time or something like that, or some dude trying to show this to their younger cousin or something for the first time.
Yeah.
They haven't watched wrestling before. What's going on? A quick recap package saves you the boon of having to, or the bane of having to explain to your cousin what, you know, has been going on with, let's say, I don't know, Swerve and Keith Lee, or, you know, the Acclaimed, and why is Billy Gunn with them now? Like, a quick recap package actually does a lot of work for them, and makes it much more likely that they'll keep watching, especially when you're not around and you're not able to explain every angle to them.
Who do you have to take the belt off of Jade Cargill? Because I don't know anymore. And I don't think it's Willow Nightingale necessarily, because she's already been beat 3 times. And she's popular, but you can't build her up. My co-host on the Dynamite show, Paul Fontaine, is like, well, if you could get Sasha here, and I don't think you can necessarily. I still think she's under contract with WWE in some way. You got nobody. You really don't, because anybody of any
Soraya,
interest,
I guess.
Who?
Soraya?
That's an interesting pick.
I mean, look.
I'm not against that. I'm not against that.
We know Soraya's not great. Like, not great right now. But is she worse than Jade Cargill?
No.
Can we get a better match out of Soraya potentially with somebody versus Jade Cargill? And I believe the answer to that's clearly yes. So she would be a pick for me.
I mean, could a cooled off Toni Storm take this off of her?
Toni Storm would also be, yeah, Toni Storm would also be in the mix there.
Okay. I just don't know, because like that interview that they did a couple weeks ago, you're just like, okay, what are they doing with her now? And it's just, it's like the only stars we can get are Jamie Hayter and DMD, and it's very weird. I mean, I might even say Thunder Rosa if they could patch things up with her, but who knows what that's going to happen.
But I mean, they've clearly hit a dead end with this Jade Cargill thing.
They've painted themselves in a corner, and they don't know how to get out of this. And I don't know if there ever was a plan. That's the weird thing.
There was no. I get, this is the real problem with like the booking patterns over the last, let's say, 6 months now. Now that we've seen some of these things play out, now that Candy had a chance to sit back for the last half year and see how 2022 was going to play out for him, Candy needs to take a step back. And, you know, really think about some of these angles and if they actually, like, you know, ultimately resulted
Kenny
in something.
Kenny or Tony? Because you've been saying Kenny, so I don't know.
No, I've been saying Canny, as
oh,
in my, my friend.
Oh, Canny. Oh, okay.
Yeah, let's see how this plays out. Yeah, that Canny.
How come you didn't give a recap of Candy and who that character is?
Right. Right. No, actually, here's the thing. I don't have to recap Candy because if you listen to the product every week and reviewed, you know, previous episodes and stayed abreast on the adjunct shows, you would know Candy. There's a wiki. There's an STR wiki. You can go and read up on this stuff.
Really?
Oh God, how horrible would that be? What a useless place on the internet that would be. Anyways, now that we've seen how some of these angles have played out for the last, you know, like, has there really been much of a plan with getting FTR have all the belts?
No.
Or are they just like dudes with belts? Has there really been much of a plan with Jade Cargill as TBS champion?
No,
she's just ping ponged from feud to feud, like with no sort of like coherent advancement in her character.
Wardlow,
Wardlow, total dead end.
Yeah, I just it's baffling to me that long term storytelling. Well, you know what? There needs to be an end point to some of these stories as opposed to waiting around to see if you can come up with one. And
a story with like a bunch of really crappy middle chapters is not a good story. Oh, even if you come up with a halfway decent ending, like,
we nailed the beginning and the end, but the middle and getting there sucked. So
yeah, the beginning was great. In the middle, we went on forever and none of it was good. And then in the ending, kind of brought it around.
Nailed the dismount, everybody. Just lost like, most of our viewers doing it. And just, yeah, it feels like there wasn't planning, and it actually feels like everybody's ending got screwed up with all the personnel changes and they didn't have a plan B. And that's a problem too. If you're so focused on something, on a story being the way it is, and oh, this actor or this person, we'll have this guy do this. And then it doesn't come through, and then you're just looking around going, type of a thing. It's not a very good plan. And it feels like, look, Statlander went down. I think she was probably the plan for Jade. CM Punk got in a fight over a dog. That was probably a plan. I mean, Kenny and the Bucks were probably a plan. But you got to make two plans in wrestling sometimes. And here it's just like, it feels like they're throwing stuff at the wall at times to me.
No, it really does. And every time it seems like incumbent on them to sort of regroup and really think about like, okay, what's the MJF era look like? Man, it's really not heartening to see what is effectively week one, where this is supposed to be the first chapter. This is not a good first chapter.
No.
Either. Like, you know, it'd be like watching Star Wars and the opening sequence, Darth Vader kills Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Who's that? We'll tell you in flashbacks later. That's what we'll do.
Darth Vader gives a promo and explains why he did that. And then the movie moves on from there.
And then he throws the Emperor down. He turns on the Emperor like after the first promo. And nobody establishes a relationship there, too. I paid for WrestleCade this weekend on Fight TV, and Boy, there was a pretty good piece of business between Dax and Speedball Bailey having a pretty good match over the weekend. But for me, the main event was on the Sunday show. I believe it was Sunday. I can't remember my days anymore. But watching the Ricky Steamboat's last match, where he teamed with FTR versus Jay Lethal, doing nothing but Macho Man cosplay, Nick Aldis and Brock Anderson. That was a... I mean, Ricky Steamboat could come in and pull out a 3.5-star match with MJF right now, just doing what he does well. The other fun match for me was the Briscoes against the Rock and Roll Express. You know, just, you know, it was a nice reunion type show in the Dorton Arena. If you have a few extra ducats, I highly recommend watching both of those shows, both the Friday night and Saturday night, or Saturday night and Sunday night. I can't remember my days anymore, but yeah, it was a, you know, it was a fun little super indie type of deal. And it was, yeah, I'm always, the Briscoes and the Rock and Roll Express was far more fun than I ever thought it would be, to be honest with you. They work really well together. So yeah, I would seek that out if you could. Your turn, sir.
Taking it over to Raw here, and I guess, you know, kind of like fall from the pay-per-view and everything too. The Bloodline stuff, great stuff. Yes. I enjoyed Owens coming out too. The Owens and Zayn interaction. Everything about this is just, there's just so much intrigue. You know, who's what is going to be the nature of Sammy's betrayal? It's like an interesting mirror image to the William Regal thing, right? Like the Zayn storyline serves as like a real testimony to the slow burn. Like the whole joy of this is the arc.
Really makes it for me is Kevin Owens basically surrendering and saying, yeah, I mean, I'd probably have done the same thing because I've been such a jerk to you all these years. And it's one of those things where it's like, look, I just don't want to be around you anymore. I just don't want you involved in my career connected to yours anymore. And I appreciate that sort of surrender type of thing. And then him immediately going, but you, Jey Uso, I'll kick your ass. You know, I still got business with you. I just don't want to deal with him anymore because I've already turned on him 20 times and it's old news. And I don't want to do that again. The Kevin Owens, you'd think he'd come out fired up about, you know, what Sammy, you were my best friend, blah, blah, blah. But I liked this as a beat. It was a more interesting choice.
Yeah, I thought so too. And like Zayn really was devastated that Owens didn't care, because the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is apathy.
Yes.
Like intense indifference. And, you know, like the commentary to this point did a really nice job, you know, again, seeding, you know, this is the best man in each other's weddings. Like, I think that that's actually good narrative plot telling here. When we're talking about the tension between these guys, I just think the writing on the Bloodline stuff has been so tight, and I think that'll really be belied whenever someone finally gets around to making like a supercut of like all these Bloodline segments. And we might have to
cut out like the first year or so when it was doing nothing.
No. I guess when I was saying all of these Bloodline segments, I'm talking about like when it started getting good, like in the post Vince record. Yeah, like when they finally really started like figuring out the Zayn thing and everything, like a supercut over the last like 3 to 4 months of just everything Bloodline, it would really belie that this has been an unbelievably strong piece of business. And Zayn's interesting and Owens is interesting in it, and yeah, I just continues to be a storyline that I'm always excited. Like, I can't wait to see what they have for tomorrow. Cause like, you know, when you don't think they're going to have anything big, that's when they like, you know, drop, like he hasn't been feeling very oosy lately at you.
He broke solo at the house show on Sunday. I don't know if you saw a video of that, but came out, he was talking about, he dropped an oosy on Solo and Solo had to cover his face with a towel because he just couldn't handle it for a moment. Which was a nice moment as well. I said this last week, but I would love the absolute 90 degree turn of Sammy eventually takes the Bloodline away from Roman and Roman has to team with Kevin Owens to get it back. kind of a thing. Like he like Sammy as ultimate puppet master, as opposed to the guy who gets turned on and beats Roman. You know, either story is interesting to me, but I'd kind of like the thing.
I'm even open to the idea that like this is like the betrayal was actually part of Owens and Sammy's plan.
Okay.
Like this is all part of a long con on the bloodline that like they knew that in order to get the because like here's the beat that we couldn't really explain, right? Owens knew that Jay was watching.
Yeah, and also, hey, we need, look, there were no stakes to War Games. We could always bury War Games in there, but we needed to get your trust somehow with the Usos, and this is how we did it. We just decided, I'll sacrifice myself at War Games, and this is how we lured you in, type of a thing.
I mean, like that conversation, like I, you know, you have to go, like, is Kevin Owens' character really so naive that he would have that conversation just in front of the Bloodline's door? Thinking that no one would catch it or eavesdrop on it. Like, what was his motive there? Like, what was both of their motives there? Like, I don't know. Like, they've given themselves multiple outs, which is the other thing that's kind of fun with this. It's like, you could choose to pick it up there. There's a number of ways to narratively satisfy this still. And that's cool. And, like, I don't know. I
hope they take one. That's the only thing that always...
No, me too. Me too. No, you got to commit at some point. And that's always, I mean... That has been a standing critique of both shows. Sometimes they don't do that, but I think they've given themselves multiple interesting pathways to commit to.
Chris, I love Becky Lynch as a wrestler and as a human being in terms of a personality and stuff like that. But I hate the man. I hate that character so much at times because it feels like such a try-hard thing when she comes out to cut the promo. And, you know, she's going to the crowd, I get that. But I'll tell you something, I howled. Number one, Aunt Pam. Aunt Pam amped it up for the fellas this week, which I appreciate, but she came out and basically cut that promo where it's like, people don't appreciate me and all the stuff I put my body through. Also true. But the whole, hey, Bob, you suck. No, Bob does not suck. Bob does not suck. I rewatched that thing 20 times and it never failed to make me laugh. I don't know why, but just the earnestness of Becky saying, no, Bob does not suck. And of course, Aunt Pam amping up the heeldom thing. I enjoyed this little, I enjoyed the brawl, although the ridiculousness of hitting people with paper signs and having to sell it kind of got to me. But yeah, we're going to get an Aunt Pam Becky feud with no title on the line, which is very interesting because it's going to rely on both their personalities to keep it going and have stakes.
Yeah, I think that's a nice little launching point here, and we'll see if they can do it. But I have confidence. I think they'll find a way. One of the nice things about the newer era here is just a little bit more microphonic freedom. So I think they'll find something to beef over that'll be halfway decent.
I hope so. I'm a little worried, though, about Bailey's positioning going into Mania. And look, this is pure bias on my part because I think she is the person who most deserves a main event slot at Mania and has never gotten it, especially during the COVID era where it's like, oh, you get to host and get to get buried by the NWO real quick. And, you know, when she was carrying this company on her shoulders for a good year or so, I just think we're going to go to the interminable Ronda Becky feud because WWE still views Ronda as a star, even though I don't at this point. She is just dreadful in every way, shape, and form and hasn't improved in the ring all that much and is terrible on promos. And then I think we're going to get Bianca and Rhea, you know, the whole new generation main event type thing, which isn't not a bad choice. I get that. I wonder where Bailey fits into all this, and I don't think it's going to be very high on the card, unfortunately.
Yeah, that remains a concern. You know, they just lost faith in the Damage Control Act so quickly.
Well, they didn't book it correctly either. I mean, they should have just run roughshod up until War Games and then figured out how to rebuild it from there, but they beat them like on week two. I think they lost a tag match in that tournament. And you're just like, what? Yeah, well, I mean, you could very well. I mean, look, Io and Bayley, that's not a bad matchup to me. I'll take that as a one-on-one match if they decide to, you know, just break them up completely and have kind of a super work rate type of match with it on the card. I mean, you can do, worse than having Bayley versus Io Sky, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, like, it almost does kind of feel like a move too would be like turn Io and Dakota.
Yeah. Although I think Dakota would probably be a redshirt for one of the sides, and then you just build that feud between those two. And I love Dakota. I mean, she, again, I rewatched that women's War Games, and she was taking some damage in that match. And you're like, I bless her ability to be a ragdoll that you can throw around, because it just made everybody look that much more of a killer. So I dug it. But your turn, sir.
It's like a quick note. I just thought Owens and Uso had a pretty nice little main event match here.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like, yeah, no, but it was fun. I liked it. It had just like a good rhythm flow to it.
It had room to breathe too. It didn't feel rushed.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like they were just going to hit these spots to go to an angle type of thing. It felt like you had a beginning, middle, and end to it, which I really liked.
I like the super kicks. I like just the way that like the super kicks, like both of them have that as a signature move, but not like their like, you know, finishing move. And I just, you know, I kind of like that being like a real joust.
Yeah.
Your turn, sir. That was quickie.
Let's go through the preposterousness of NXT. And those
that wraparound shit.
What are they calling this? The What's the name of the gimmick match that they're booking here? I can't remember.
The Iron Survivor.
Iron Survivor, yes. And
Iron Survivor.
Can we possibly smarten up the people that we're using for this segment as to whether or not we're going to be talking about real attributes or storyline attributes? Because some people were doing one, and some people were doing the other. Molly Holly was treating this as if it were real. X-Pac probably treating it as if it were real. Everybody else, storyline type thing. Some of the choices in this, God bless Kiana James, my current favorite NXT wrestler for reasons other than anything having to do with her talent or ability. But again, I just love the gimmick of She's obviously a porn star in a movie that has in a
that
porn world with those
things. That flashes up. The marquee that flashes up with all of the different acronyms is so absurd. It's like, yeah, like it's so ridiculous.
It's, and her buxom like, Brazilian
it's
secretary.
That went too far.
Yeah. I don't know. What was more ridiculous? The booking me about the women's Iron Survivor or that weird pirouette spin thing that Nikita Lyons did to sell her knee injury, where she looked like she hit nothing. She just jumped up, spun around, and landed on her knees.
Lyons has a lot of work to do. There's something there, but like there are clear blind spots in her game,
yes,
that have yet to be addressed.
And
yeah,
I think she's
no.
miscast. She should have been the one to turn heel. She's a
yeah,
perfect
I agree.
Bader type heel for the women's division because she's so much bigger than all these other women in size.
It would
presence.
Allow her to work slower too and less
yes.
flashy. And like that would really like yeah, I she would be a great Vader type heel. I could like see the gloves on her right now. And
oh,
just,
I
like,
could
her,
see
like,
her
flubbing.
Pummeling Casey Catanzaro with forearms.
Oh,
and
so
just
good.
Going,
yeah.
yes, give me
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yeah. Even like 2-on-1 handicap matches with her just like kind of like ragdolling people would be a lot of fun.
Okay, remind me, who were they talking about the fifth person in the men's match? It was Von Miller, linebacker. Von Wagner, thank you.
Von Wagner's a shooting guard.
Von Wagner, Andre Chase, and who was the third one they were considering?
Is it Dijak? Or no, it was McDonough.
Yeah, no, I think the ace is in there. But maybe you're
yeah.
right. I don't know. It was somebody
that,
with
that's the one. That's the one that where you're right. Waltman was kind of like, he's a creep. And I was kind of like, what are we talking about?
What yes, context? What are we talking about exactly? Are we crossing the line here? Or are we?
Are you saying this in a Kevin Owens way?
I mean, they're seriously going, okay, do we want Von Wagner, a big, strong power dude? Or do we want the guy with the college sweater who does comedy matches. And you're like, are we really having this conversation right now against all these other work rate guys that we're gonna put?
Axiom was mentioned, but he was out with an injury.
Yeah,
but then he wasn't out with an injury. That which was the funniest part is that he shows up later in another segment. He's not actually injured.
I think
so,
he did that twice.
Axiom, in his brilliance, decided to keep that he wasn't injured a secret from not only Big Body Javi but also the booking committee when he could have been inserted in the Iron Survivor match. Smart move, dude. Nice turtleneck.
This was overthinking things. This is so. Oh, we need to see the backstage machinations of legends because they're draws. And it's just like, guys, just name somebody, put them in the match, or have a three way and just do the thing as opposed to trying to pump up these people while also secretly burying everybody in this match. You're just like, why would I want to see this? Now afterwards, it's already a convoluted rules match that is making TNA roll over in its grave. I laughed at all this because I'm just like, God, they want us to take this so seriously and nobody cares. It's like, really, just put a fifth guy in the match and then build why they should be in that match and what they're going to get if they win it. Because has that been announced? Do they get a title shot if they win this match?
I'm so confused. Like,
You get the honor of being the first Iron Survivor.
I cannot explain to you a single thing about the Iron Survivor tournament. I'm not looking right now, and I'm totally relying solely on my recall. I remember the booking committee meetings, but I cannot say that I left with a single sense of like what the stipulations of this are. It's like a war game style match, right?
It's like an elimination chamber match, but an Iron Man match at the same time. It's okay. We start with two people. Every 5 minutes, another person comes in. If you get pinned, then you have to spend some time in a jail cell.
The penalty.
Yeah.
Cool. I can't wait. Yeah. Sounds really good.
I will be waiting.
Yeah, no, I'll be watching it on fucking, I'll be watching it on 1.25 speed, I'll tell you that much.
you got anything else you want to bring up?
The one thing that I was maybe waiting for on this whole show was like, you know, like the Creeds, and like Creed McDonough never really got a chance to get out the blocks because of course Indy Shear has to come out.
This is a weird feud.
It really is.
It's like they didn't really. Well, we have this tag team and we have this tag team. Well, now they have to fight. How can we do this? Well, let's use JD McDonough hitting Sanga with a chair. Okay, why aren't all four of them just going to kill Sanga now, or kill JD McDonough now? Why are they focused on each other?
I know. I don't get that. And then, like, the palace intrigue of Dijak meeting with Tony D'Angelo and Stacks of, like, no, please don't make him join up with Tony D'Angelo. You just redebuted him. He looked good.
Oh, and he's also injured, apparently, but then he appears later that night, too.
Yeah. That's right. Tony D'Angelo also was, like, out with injuries, but is actually fine. So, like, smooth move. Smart move, the Don of NXT, keeping your injuries secret.
Yeah,
from the
we really had some thinking and outlining on this show. I think it's just a bunch of people who don't watch the product that decide to ad lib, and you're just like, no, don't do that.
I guess the one thing I'm really baffled by in the Paul Levesque era of WWE is like, why is this NXT still so stupid?
Yes. Why hasn't NXT gotten an overhaul? Because I guess they found something positive in the concentrating on character as opposed to work rate, indie, super few or super fed type of thing. And, you know.
But this is so dumb because you've got like good workers here. Like the Creeds are good workers. Carmelo is a good worker.
Breaker's
solid. Yeah, Carmelo's great. Yeah, like, yeah, no, Breaker, he's really good. Breaker's really good. Like, you have To the Moon, Cameron Grimes. Like, you have like a number of guys who, yeah, you have like a number of guys who can really go on this NXT roster. And I mean, especially with like AEW kind of dogging it right now a little bit in terms of consistency, it would actually be not a horrible time to, like, you know, put some gas into the tank of NXT and see what happens.
Yeah, I would agree. I would, man, I might make the mystery person a main roster person each of these matches. I mean, you know, it's a gimmick, don't get me wrong, and kind of buries the NXT roster a little bit, but it might give a little bit of heat to somebody. Like, if you put a Mustafa Ali in this match, I would not mind, because they're not doing anything with him on the main roster.
Yeah, no, I mean, that wouldn't be a bad call. I kind of enjoyed that interaction between Apollo Crews and Bron Breakker.
Yeah.
I thought that it was like, there was just like an interesting, like, tense energy between them. I liked it. I mean, like,
yeah, when Apollo Crews is allowed to, when Apollo Crews is allowed to play a real person, he can bring the intensity and stuff, as opposed to playing whatever weird character he's
doing. We've always said this, and I don't know that they have like super great plans for him or anything, but like, he's been quietly, like, nicely repackaged back to the Apollo Crews that I like.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Same. That's all I got. You?
Me too.
Okay, let's end it there. You can follow me on Twitter still, as opposed to Chris.
Makes one of us, Jeff.
At Crap Game 13, I am staying. I enjoy the platform. That's all I'm going to say. I also do a show called The Dynamite Show on Fight Game Media, patreon.com/fightgamemedia for $5 a month. You can partake in all those shows. The other people who do an AEW show on their thing just did a Hall of Boom, because their show is called The Boom. And really highlighted heroes of the pandemic era. It's an interesting listen, but we're on a network ourselves, and we're no slouches. It's Voices of Wrestling podcasting network, Music of the Mat. We have Open the Voice Gate. We have the Thunder podcast, which I can't remember the name of, but it's very, very interesting stuff, because I didn't watch Thunder a lot. But and of course, the flagship with Joe and Rich on
it's
all your
Days of Thunder.
Days of Thunder.
Days of Thunder.
Why did I remember that? it's a great Tom Cruise flick. Anyways. If you're only subscribed to us, we thank you, but hey, do the super feed and listen to all the other Voices shows, because if you have a niche, go ahead and find your niche.
Scratch your niche.
Chris has other projects, and he's very heavy on the gram right now, so he's gonna plug that for you.
Yeah, if you go over to my Instagram, that is where you can follow all my music endeavors and that sort of thing. I am putting up just talking and referencing my guitar demo videos, which I'll be doing to get more gigs and that sort of thing. Making music, and I still have the Patreon for Don't Worry About the Government, which you can find at patreon.com/DWATG. Right now, kind of stay tuned for music releases over the next month here, and then once I get done on the other side of the move, there will be more Don't Worry About the Government, but there is no longer any Don't Worry About the Government Twitter feed. I went to pay Elon Musk my $8 and accidentally clicked deactivate. Real shame.
What is your Instagram handle, sir? Because you did not put that in here.
Oh, yes. Dr_Nov.
Doctor D-O-C, as in the word doctor.
As in the word doctor. Yeah. _Nov. But as in like the character _, not doctor, then the word _, and then Nov. It'd be doctor and then... _. No.
You know, because we need that recap for the listeners, just in case.
No, I go and follow me on Instagram.
Cheering at pro wrestling shows in Japan is back, and 2023 is already shaping up to be a big year in the history of pro res. That's why you should listen to the Emerald Flow Show. From the Royal Road to the Green Mat, Paul and Gerard take you into the world of All Japan Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling NOAH. Not only do we analyze events, but we examine business, who is getting over, what angles are working or not. Occasionally, we take a look at other Japanese promotions like DDT and Zero One. So if you're looking for more coverage of the world of Japanese wrestling, check out the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on all of your favorite podcast apps.